and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for October 28th, and it's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and hiding out at the pizzeria in Koenji is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
As you said, the pizzeria in Koenji, and not just at any pizzeria. I'm at the one and only Bione here in Koenji. I'm sipping on my complimentary mugicha and about to dig into a pizza margarita, so I'm doing real well. You know, I'm being evicted from Japan Baseball Weekly podcast annex tonight.
You're not ever evicted. You just there's just overcrowding that's taking place.
That's unwanted. Yeah, and she said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Can I go out and do the podcast?" She says, "You're kidding me." No.
No. All right, well, we don't want to keep you out there too long. But it sounds like you're having fun. I wouldn't mind changing places with you until that.
Until
the pizza's gone.
Well, that's a good thing about living in Koenji is that it's so many restaurants and places are open till morning. So it's kind of handy, if I have to record the podcast at 1 a.m.
Yeah. All right. On this week's show, we've got the PLCS finale. We're going to talk about the Japan series, games 1 and 2. We're going to talk about the draft and a lot more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so the final stage, we're going to go back in time again, talk with Sherman and the Wayback Machine just for a short moment here and go back to the PLCS finale in the final stage, game 4. Just to recap, it was 8-5. The Eagles won and got to advance. They beat the Lotte Marines, and that was a week ago on Monday.
It seems so long ago.
It does. Now, watching the game, it just seemed like a party mood out there. I know you were there. And then Rakuten starter Wataru Karashimo, he was really hitting his location like the first three innings or first two innings.
Right.
And he was nearly flawless. And I'm like, well, how long is this going to last? But the Eagles made it 3-0. And I thought that was the worst thing for this young pitcher because he is human. And it's human nature to think ahead. And before he knew it, he was in a jam, and then...
Before he knew it, he was facing a guy who had 3 at-bats off him in his career and hit one for a grand slam.
Yeah, Gigi Sato is standing up there, and he cranks one out for a 4-3 Lotte lead, and there goes the lead, there goes the party atmosphere, it seemed. But it didn't damper the mood that much, I didn't think, watching on TV. It just seemed like people said, oh, well, I guess we're going to have to work harder for this one, but it's... But it's not, you know, we're winning this game today is what I felt.
Right. But it was, the place was rocking pretty much. And then, of course, they didn't waste a lot of time coming back, so.
Right. Now, you said that, Yuki Karakawa was the starter for the Lotte Marines. And you said on the show that, you thought that wasn't a good matchup. But I didn't really think that highly of him. I just thought he had a couple good starts. I didn't think that was really going to carry over.
Very good starts.
Yeah, two at the end of the season and then one against the Lions.
Important start.
It was important. It was good, but it was only 5 innings as I recall, and he wasn't dominating. He was just good. I wasn't about to hand him a win just because he was going up against Karashima, but I said it before.
You didn't like Karashima either.
I didn't like him either, and I didn't think he was going to last long, and he didn't. But, I said before earlier in the season that I thought pitching was the problem for the Marines, and I think that's why they didn't advance in this situation. It's just because their pitching staff was kind of in shambles. I mean, the guys...
Seth Greisinger was on painkillers, and...
And he had
it was patched together with bubble gum and scotch tape,
bubble gum and band-aids.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right,
can we keep this tendon from coming apart? With an extra ace bandage.
All right, so you got a chance to talk to Andrew Jones right after the clincher, and so let's take a listen to that.
Nice game. A couple of big hits. How does it feel right now that you're one step away from
I think everything we were looking for this. I think getting the chance to reach there was very important for us starting the season. That was our goal.
Right.
But now we got one more step to go, so we're looking forward for it.
Okay. Now that, you know, you had that rain out yesterday, what was the mood of the team?
Well, I mean, you know, we stay focused, and I think give us an extra day, you know, to refocus and come back. You know, sometimes for the pitching staff, it's good because you get an extra day and get a little stronger. But you know, we came right away, scored right away, and you know, a lot of credit to them. They didn't give up, so they kept fighting toward the end. So a lot of respect to the Chiba Lotes. You know, they always been right behind us since the beginning of the season, and you know, they did a tremendous job.
How does it feel to be in this kind of environment where the city's never won a championship before to bring everything to these people here?
Well, in the beginning of the season, I think you know, talking with a lot of people, talking with, you know, with the coaching staff and the players, we want to do something special for this city. You know, since the tsunami happened here, you know, we're trying to do something to make the people forget and make them come together and have something to look forward for every day on this regular day basis. So, you know, so they can kind of put that tragedy behind them. But, you know, since we stopped playing good baseball, these fans came. They came for us through. They came. They back us up all the way. And you know, I'm so proud of the team and the fans too.
You got a new challenge now, Giants.
Well, you know, I think for our coaching staff, you know, I think that's what they will want to look forward for. So you know, just had to continue to keep playing good baseball, pitch the way we need to pitch, and hit when we need to, and we're gonna be fine.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. We had talked a lot all year, and in fact, ever since the tsunami and earthquake, about that synergy or that relationship, often very painful relationship between the team and the community and the region sent up in the Tohoku. Mm-hmm. And Oshino felt in 2011, I'm sure I mentioned this because we had a chat just two summers ago, that he felt that the Eagles were pressing. In
right.
order to be too good, you know, in order to do better for the, you know, for their besieged region.
Right, I remember that.
So this year it was like, we're going to do it, but, you know, we're going to just do fundamentally the right things. And Andrew Jones and Casey McGee coming in there and really made a difference in that respect, because it was all about these two guys who don't flinch about anything. They're really savvy and calm, and nothing's phasing them. You know, even all the little, as I said, all the little nonsense that is a part of playing baseball in Japan, nothing got to them. So to be where they are was quite a, I think, a tribute to the whole team and the whole organization and to their leadership, as Hoshino has said before.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for doing the interview. I know you were pressed for time and everything, so I appreciate you talking to him. Well, yeah, the Eagles, they looked good that day. They scored a lot of runs, which I kind of expected them to do, and they did the things they had to do, and they got to move on. I thought after the game was a very poignant moment for skipper Seiichi Hoshino, who called the players his sons during the on-field interview. I mean, this is a guy.
Usually refers to the sons as something else.
This is a guy who's the ultimate grumpy old man, even when he was a young man. And there's still lots of video. Anytime you want to do a search, you do a video search of him blowing up at umpires and mistreating some of his players. It's all out there. I mean, but I think Malkoon has, I think he's changed his mentality so much, because he never really has been in awe of a player, and I think he really is of Malkoon, and then I think the other guys are following in line, and I think that's part of the reason that they won the Pacific League title. And you know, I just see this guy, every time I look in his face, I see the guy bumping around umpires and punching, what is it, Eiji Ochi, I think it was, he punched in the dugout once before, and I still see that guy, and he's turned into a teddy bear.
Well, as I told you, I asked him, in fact, it was that day we were in at Tokyo Dome together, or was it Chiba?
Tokyo Dome,
and I said, you know, you're not as combative as you used to be. He said, of course not, I'm old!
He growls back. All right, well, let's move on to the Japan series now. The Eagles got to host the first two games of the series at home.
Yeah, big thing.
You and I are watching on TV, but it seems like a party up there, and including in the area with those additional seats that have been
rickety risers.
The rickety risers. And then on Saturday, Takahiro Norimoto throws probably one of his best games of his career. He looked really calm. They gave up a run because of an error. That's the weak, you know, Ginji Akaminai has been a great hitter for him all season, but he's their weakest infielder, and he made an error. And
I think Matsui could be questionable, but he's played well. I would take Matsui's length there.
But he's played well all year. I'm sure, you know, his arm is not what it used to be, and all we can make all those assessments about his play, but he's gotten it done. But Ginji is definitely a guy who is there. He's out there for his bat. I don't think they even had a position for a while.
I think Ginji is getting better with every game.
He is. But he is definitely.
He had a really good climax series, and he made it. And his error was odd. I thought it was, you know, this is an error that a poor fielder won't get, because a poor fielder would be watching that ball go into right field for a single.
You mean a fielder without range?
Without range, exactly. Somebody who can't get to the ball. Somebody who can't move.
All right. Well, he made a nice stop. He just made a bad throw. But I mean, it happens.
Stop. But the problem was that, you know, he should have ate the ball. He had a difficult throw from the angle he was trying to throw, and it's sort of like, I just better throw it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ways we could explain the error, but it happened, and
he made a good dive to get a ball scooting between first and second, and then he got some semblance of balance, but not enough, and he had to throw to get the runner in a flash.
Right.
Except that he didn't make a good throw in a flash. He had to rush a throw that was not, that he needed to get set and balanced for, and he wasn't. So
right.
Anyway, the runner gets on, which, like I said, the runner would have gotten on. That runner was bound to get on. Either the ball, you know, he saved a ball from going into the outfield, but that runner was bound to get on.
Okay.
And, the error is sort of, you know, It's unfortunate because he got the first part of the hard play and he didn't get the second part. So.
He didn't get the easier part. Yeah. Yeah. So, it happens. So, yeah. I understand.
It sounded like he was out there kicking the ball around short right field or something.
Well, I didn't mean it to sound that way, but I mean, he is, I would say he is their poorest infield defender, but yeah, that's a matter of opinion and we don't have the numbers to back it. I know Matsui hasn't been good and I was ripping him for his arm and his throwing ability when he came back from the States. But this year he played a lot better. He's thrown a lot better. He still loops a lot of throws over to first base, and you wonder how he gets them out, but he gets it done. So
error opened that inning.
It was the fifth inning, and Yoshiyuki Kamei comes up and hits a double to the gap. Now, I thought that was a bad pitching sequence for Norimoto, and he left a fastball over the plate, and still when it was hit, I thought it could have been caught, but then when I saw the outfielders were positioned, they just had no chance. They did a good job.
Yeah, because, Hijiri Sawa shaded towards right?
I thought that was a fly ball that was sort of headed to the gap, but it was in the air a long time, and I just thought they'd be able to get under it.
Well, Masuda is not, I'll be honest, Masuda is their weakest outfielder,
without a doubt. Yeah.
And that's why at Tokyo Dome, I think Ginji Akaminai is back in the outfield where he used to play, so I think he'll be back in left field.
Yeah, I think so too.
It was a ball that got through, but anyway, so Kamei gets, he's already, I think he had already had a walk in that game, and he hits a big double.
Yeah, he did have a walk.
Hello?
And he had the double, and then up comes Hashimoto who hits a ground ball, and they get the runner at the plate, and it was second and third and nobody out. They get the runner at the plate, and it looks, okay, now they have a chance to get out of this. And then I think they made another pitching mistake to Hisayoshi Chono.
Right.
I didn't think a fastball.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, you know, I was thinking the same thing, because everybody, Norimoto's got a great forkball, and I'm thinking, oh, runner at third, you know, you'd throw. They're probably thinking, we're not going to see a forkball because afraid of throwing in the dirt. And if that had been a fork ball, then Chono swings over at strike three, but instead he throws a fastball that doesn't have a lot of movement on it. It is out. It's probably, yeah, it's a couple of inches out of the zone or so, but he takes the right field, opposite field.
And he pushes it through. But again, it was just a mistake in terms of pitching pattern. You could see Chono was a little bit off balance, but he saw it was a fastball. His backside was flying out, but he still had enough to push the ball. And it was just a little ground ball. It just got through. So I think, you know, if you're Norimoto, you think, well, you know, that's a ground ball that just got through. We can't worry about it, but it was the fifth inning. So now, you know, that puts the pressure on that was the key thing. That put the pressure on the Eagles. And then we had Kazuo Matsui doing a Yasiel Puig impression on the base paths in the bottom of the inning. And I thought, you know, I thought this was bad for, well, a few reasons, but of course the biggest thing is, you know, this is your captain of your team. He's 38 years old, not 28. And he's out there running around, and not the, even that he made the first out at third base in this particular play. That wasn't the big deal. The big deal for me was that he's a leader.
Right.
You know, he's a leader on the team, on a team that of a bunch of guys, and he actually has played in a Japan series before, and he should take the leading role and say, hey, look, I'm going to show you guys how to do it. And if you make plays like that, it leads to other guys making plays like that.
Okay,
and we saw that tonight in game two, but we'll get to that later.
Okay, just to go back for all the listeners. So the situation is just a runner on second. Okay, so there's a ground ball to short.
Ground ball deep in the hole is short.
Right.
And Sakamoto grabs it for the Giants, and he makes a throw to first base.
He's got no play.
He's basically got no play, but he makes a throw anyway that kind of one hops. Now, as soon as Matsui sees Sakamoto trying to throw to first, he decides he's going to try to go all the way
around. There was a runner on first. Matsui was on first. Yeah.
Right. Matsui was on first, and Shima had hit the ball.
Right.
So as soon as he saw that the runner was going to be on safe at first, that Shima was going to be safe at first, he saw Sakamoto throw the ball toward first base, and I think he thought that Sakamoto had no chance to get a strong throw to first base, which he didn't. But the problem is the throw that he made pulled Jose Lopez toward third base, and the play was right in front of him. And Matsui tried to go for
Lopez. Made a really good play on that.
Well, they say he made a good play, but I mean the infield's probably throwing. They're probably screaming, you know, go to third with the ball, go to third with the ball. And Matsui again, he's 38. He's not that fast. So
he basically. Yeah, it was a fairly poor gamble on his front. You know, I like, you know, a situation where there's a runner on second and there's a ball to shortstop that's trouble.
Right.
I love it when the runner from second takes off and tries to make it to third. Now, the reason I like that play is because every now and, you know, you might be out half the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what you gain, you don't lose. You don't pick up an out because the batter is going to be out at first. You don't pick up an out. What you pick up is a base runner. If you lose a base because you instead you have a runner at first instead of second, but you have the same number of outs. So you lose one base, but if the guy misses that throw or fails to make that play, you end up with a runner and an out, and a base.
But
it's a tremendous payoff. Yeah.
It's a different situation, yeah.
It is a little different situation because he wasn't at second base when he was just getting to second base when Sakamoto was letting go of the ball. You know, if he's got a jump, if he's a quarter of the way and he's got a jump,
yeah,
and he courts the throw, yeah, then take for it. But he was, you know, he just rounded the base.
Yeah,
so
he rounded the base.
That was a really bad gamble on his part.
Yeah, and I think it was an unnecessary risk that just seemed to suck some of the life out of the stadium and the team because, again, people, they're following his lead. He's the captain. I just felt like the team was confident that one run wasn't going to beat them. But then when they made that mistake, it kind of put some doubts out there. Now, of course, he's batting seventh. Shima's batting eighth. And their number nine hitter was coming up, and then Okajima was coming up, and he hadn't been doing anything yet. So I just think it was a really bad risk that they didn't need to take. And yeah, of course, it led. I don't know that it had anything to do.
The other thing is, in Japan, if you make an out, whenever the lead runner is out, because of all this emphasis on one run.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much a catastrophe.
That's what it was.
Even like I said, you know, even when it's a situation like the one I previously described, where you know it's a difference between having first and third and a man on first or a man on second. Even that minuscule difference is considered something of a catastrophe. Like, you know, it's something that it's like the game is over. Like, how can we come back from this catastrophe because the lead runner got thrown out on a play? But So in Japan, when you lose the lead runner, it's really a bigger blow than it needs to be, because everyone's going like, oh, you know, we're done now.
It's really dramatic, yeah. Well, so I thought, okay, well, he owes the team something, and I think he'll be able to come back and make up for it at some point later in the game, because it was only the fifth inning. They ended up not scoring in that inning. They didn't score in the sixth inning with a couple runners on. They got a couple runners on in the eighth inning as well. They didn't score. In the seventh inning as well, and they didn't score. And then comes the eighth inning. Two outs and two on for Matsui, and he hits this ball to left field. Now, when he hit it, and of course I'm watching on TV, I didn't think he had a good enough swing to get it out of the park. And we know the ball doesn't carry very well over at Kleenex Stadium. So I didn't think it was out, but I thought it might have had a chance depending on where the fielders were. Now, here's the thing about this is that...
Well, of course it doesn't carry there because the park's at sea level and it's really cold.
Yeah, and it was pretty cold that night too. And here's the thing is that the Giants have, for recent years or many years under Tatsunori Hara, their skipper, they like to play the outfield in to try to choke off runs at the plate. And I didn't hear the announcer say that field was playing particularly shallow. So I just wondered, you know, again, when you're not at the game, it's hard to factor in all these things. So when the ball was hit, I just thought it might have a chance to get to the wall. And as you know, they love playing the outfield in to choke off runs. And I think the fact that I didn't mention that Shuichi Murata hit a home run in the top of the inning to make this a two-run game instead of one-run game. And I think that they were willing to give up the one run and play a little bit deeper. And Kate, just to make sure that a ball didn't get hit over their head. And that was the factor that led to this great catch by Yoshiyuki Kame, who goes back and he leaps in. He looked terrible the whole time the camera hit him. I don't know what he looked like at the beginning when he was going back on this ball, but by the time the camera got there, he looked like he was going in slow motion and he wasn't sure. And he kind of stumbled and he leaps at the very, he was a very awkward leap. The ball goes into his glove.
Well, it's an awkward fence. It's not like Tokyo Dome where, you know, it's a single plane. It's one of these, I guess, prototypical, let's say, like Jingu and Seibu, where there's basically a rubber padded wall, and then there's a screen on top of it. It's not as high as the one at Jingu. And you can, in fact, Murata's home run came probably within about 5 inches of being caught.
Yeah, that's true too.
So this one wasn't probably that. This one was about I'm going to say wasn't hit as down far as down the line. It was hit a little further. It was probably hit as far as Murata's was, but it was just hit to a little deeper part of the park. And
yep.
It's an irregular fence, and I think Kame hit the fence, and then. I think when his left hand comes down with the ball, his elbow hit the top of the pad, and the ball nearly jarred loose.
Yeah,
it was a tough play. But you know, here's the thing that Jason Koskery and I were discussing on Twitter is pretty much the whole game is, you know, you're in a Japan series you're playing against a team that pretty much has good pitching and defense and chokes off all kinds of offense. The best thing you can do is load up your lineup with more power. Okay, now Tatsunori Hara, I don't dislike his choice, but he has, because of his two left-handed power-hitting left fielders, John Bowker and Yoshinobu Takahashi, he has a DH on the bench. And instead of putting one of those guys in left field, I would have probably picked Bowker.
Mm-hmm. I would have too, just for the record.
Takahashi has his DH. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You would have put Bowker in left field. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He put Kame, his right fielder, in left. Put Chono, his normal center fielder, in right. So he upgraded his defense. He upgraded a pretty good defense to, you know, he went from a A minus defense to an A defense in order to take somebody who's got real pop out of the lineup. Now I like the guy he put in center field, Itaro Hashimoto, I think is a tremendous player. Actually, I think he's going to be a tremendous player at this level. So far, he's been a tremendous player in the minor leagues. He hasn't done much at this level, he's been a tremendous minor league star for the Giants, for the last couple of years. And I think he's going to be a comparable player to him as a Takumi Kuriyama of the Lions.
Right.
So he's that kind of player, you know, and he's a good player to have on the team, but I think he's also a guy who's still making the adjustments at this level. He could have a breakthrough year. Next year, he has the skills. He's probably much better than the 239 average he showed this year. But again, I'd want the power out there. But here's the thing. It's a bad gamble on Hara's part, but this is a game that was largely decided because Kamei was in left field and Chono was in right field.
Yeah, it turned out to
because
be
the Giants' outfield defense was better than it usually is, and it only needed to be just a little better, and it made the difference in the game.
Yep. Yeah. So Kamei makes this catch. You know, like I was saying, he goes up in the air, he leaps, he catches the ball, he comes down, he ends up hitting the fence, as you described, and then the ball seemed like it was going to come out of his glove, but it didn't. He holds on to it and gets back to the dugout, gets a hero's welcome. They finish it off, of course, with a little bit of drama in the ninth inning, but it was, you know, Kentaro Nishimura who finished it out. And
all the Giants relievers, had two base runners. They had, you know, they're talking about the Giants, you know, rock solid bullpen, and these guys had six base runners on in the last three innings, and it was not as easy as it looked.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't. That's
the thing. The Eagles did have a ton of base runners. They just went 0-for-9 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, well, this is the team that led the Pacific League in runs scored. So, and I'm sorry, they were second in runs scored. So they, you know, they can put up some runs. So we know that. But let's go to game two today, Sunday. Makun, can't stress enough how important it was for them to win this game, and they did. They did win.
If you lose, you're done.
Yeah, they won it 2-1. Now there was some talk too. I wanted to touch on this real quick. The fact that Norimoto got the start in game one and not game two. And my philosophy, you know, I was trying to figure it out, and I thought, all right, well, if they throw Norimoto in game one and they throw Tanaka in game two, and there's an off day, that means that Tanaka could possibly come back and pitch from out of the bullpen for game three. And so I thought that was the case. Otherwise, if he throws in game one, he's not going to be able to throw in from the bullpen in game two. They're going to have to skip him. But I thought, you know, they're not going to need him in game one. He's going to throw a complete game anyway. And then Norimoto can throw the second game. I just would have started him in game one. I'm trying to rationalize and try to figure out Hoshino's thinking on this, but I think it had something to do with their plans for him coming out of the bullpen. I said before the series started, if they're going to win the series, I think he's going to have to throw in the four games that they win. So we'll see how that plays out.
I think they're saving him for the bullpen for when they're leading this. You know, his plan is that they're going to lead this series 3-1 and have a 7-run lead in the ninth inning in game five, and so Tanaka can come out of the bullpen and finish beyond the mound, because that's been his MO for this entire season.
All right, so game two, they win 2-1. Makun goes all the way, 127 pitches. He gets he gives up the one run, and again, he gives up a home run to Takayuki
Terauchi
by throwing a pitch right down the heart of the plate, and just saying, here it is, hit it, and the kid hits it out. He had another single tonight.
He had two today, and he had the 3-run home run off of Kenta Maeda. Yeah, he hit four home runs. He hit two home runs this year during the regular season.
Two, yeah.
And he has two in the – he has never hit another postseason home run as far as I can tell. My numbers are a little shaky on that. But basically, I'm thinking, wow, does he really take – you know, does he really trouble ace pitchers? But I didn't even know the two guys he hit home runs off this year. It's like, who are these guys?
Yeah, two home runs he's got this year, and then two in the postseason. Yeah, it's nutty. So, Genji Akaminai, who usually hits when Makun is on the mound, had an RBI single to knock in Nakaten's first ever Japan Series run. And then another runner, or batter runner, they like to call him in the rule book, who's sliding at first base and a head first slide, and they steal a run because they fooled the umpire, with a runner at third and two out. It was first and third, actually, and two out. And Kazuya Fujita dives at the bag, and he was obviously late. He was a foot behind the throw, and the umpire just called him safe for some reason, and it ends up costing this game. And I think when they go back and they review, I think they're going to just say they're going to outlaw head sliding at first base.
Well, that would be a step in the right direction.
I don't know how they can. Like I said, on a past show years ago,
soccer, get a yellow card for diving, baby.
That's right. I said on a past show, you know, we had someone wrote in with a question and said, why do Japanese players so often slide head first at first base? And I said, I don't know. It slows them down. But I said that maybe they know they're going to be out, and that's one way of tricking the umpire, because of that distinct sound of the foot hitting the bag versus the ball hitting the glove, that they force the umpires to actually watch the play instead of listen.
Well, the you know, didn't we – I have been watching a fair number of major league games the last couple of weeks in the playoffs, and we had a head first slide into first base in one of those games.
Yes, we did. Yeah, I've seen those too. So maybe they're just, you know, they're just trying to trick the umpires.
But I've seen it now. It's like Japan.
Yeah, if you know you're going to be out, I guess it's a way of throwing off the umpire. So. But as it turns out, that, you know, I think that's going to be a big deal. If the Eagles win another game and they get close to that third game before the Giants do, I think the Giants are going to be furious about that. And you know the Giants, that you can't cheat them out of a World Series. You can't cheat them out of a Japan series, you know.
Well, yeah, but I'll tell you, the Eagles, you know, I don't want to make too big a deal about it, but you know, when Masahiro Tanaka's pitching, there's all kinds of breaks that just kind of seep out of the woodwork.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. I think it's just the way it goes this year. I mean, and in case anybody's counting and didn't see it on Twitter tonight, this was his 30th consecutive winning decision.
Yep.
If you count the regular season.
If you count the regular season.
And his fourth.
Or if you count the postseason. Yeah.
Of course, had two saves thrown in there. Yep. And it was also his fourth complete game postseason win in four starts.
Wow.
So he's allowed four runs, three of them earned in, you can do the math, 36 innings.
36 innings. And this was a three hitter, and he walked three, and he hit a batter. Of course, I didn't think he was very unhappy about that. I think he pitched around Yoshinobu Takahashi a lot tonight.
After that first one, he hit that screaming liner off of the first one.
Yeah, I didn't think he wanted any part of him, to be honest. But, again, base running gaffes from the Eagles. This time it was Andrew Jones who got picked off first base. Now, I didn't understand this at all either, because the situation was one out, and he was the back
the trail runner
in a first and second situation, right. And he gets picked off of first base, and I'm thinking, you know, you're not going to score even if there's a double hit. What are you doing? You know,
Lopez decoyed him. He wasn't holding him. Was playing well off the bag, and he just snuck in, and they had a prepared play on, and got Andrew Jones napping.
Yeah, I just can't see any situation why you would be nailed, glued. Somebody get out a staple gun and put him on that bag and don't let him get off. I mean,
well, of course, like, they solved that problem. I think they solved that problem in the bottom of the eighth inning when they pinch ran for
him. Yeah, we'll teach you, old dude.
Right.
But
Just walk, get out. Get off the field.
Get out of here. You're killing us. But, yeah, I'm surprised that the Eagles are not hitting as much as we've seen them hit in the regular season. That's simply because I don't think the Giants' pitching is that shut down. And, of course, Sugano was
hit five, although, to be honest, they haven't hit that well. They have hit some balls right at people. The Giants' outfield defense has been quite good. The Giants' pitching has not been quiet. Although I thought Sugano was quite good. I thought Utsumi was really shaky.
Yeah, he was himself. He puts a lot of guys on. But I think Sugano was fantastic.
As good as he was against Carp, he was really good. Maybe not. I can't say that. I didn't see the Carp game. But he was quite good. He was. His pitches had some good movement. He was he and Abe seemed to have a pretty good plan moving the ball around, given different looks at different phases of the game. So I think he was quite good, but the Eagles, so many of their hits have been, I think they're a little tight swinging the bat because the hits, so many of their hits are infield singles that just don't have any business being singles. I have to count it up, but I would guess of the Eagles' 18 hits, probably six of them haven't left the infield.
Yeah, well, they had, you know, that first game they had the two infield hits in one inning and it didn't get them anywhere. But yeah, certainly I'm expecting them to hit a little bit better, especially in those situations where they can get runs, but they haven't done it. But I think things are going to turn around for them a little bit at Tokyo Dome. I think actually maybe not until game four. I'm not sure what to expect of Sugiuchi. But for the rest of the series, I don't see the bullpen for the Eagles taking care of a game. And it's going to cost them a game, at least one in this series. And I hope they can get it to a game seven. I'm thinking that it's going to come to go back to Tohoku, go back to Sendai for game six, and that maybe Makun throws again. Now, whether he wins that game or loses the game, maybe that will decide the Japan series. We'll have to see. But I'm hoping Mima pitches well. Expect Sugiuchi and Holton to pitch fairly well. But I would think that the Eagles are going to score a little bit more at Tokyo Dome and in the next two games. And then we'll see what happens after that. And obviously game five is going to be huge.
Well, I think, yeah, I'm not an optimist as far as the Eagles go. I think
it's kind of hard.
I don't think they're going to see Sendai again. I think this is going to be three and out at Tokyo Dome. Mm. I like, there's so many things that they have to overcome here. I mean, they are a very good team. Now, they are, what they have going for them is that they're incredibly scrappy. They also have a very, their power game is basically just Andrew Jones and Casey McGee.
Yeah.
Some of the other guys could hit home runs in Tokyo Dome. I mean, Teruichi could hit a home run in Tokyo Dome. And, the other Giants guys.
And Ginji could go deep, and yeah, some of the other Giants guys.
I don't think, but they're just not a big power hitting team. They score a lot of runs because they get a lot of guys on base.
Yeah.
They're a high on base percentage game, team. And those are the teams that do not do well when the other team plays good pitching and defense because they cause you to get fewer runners on base. Now, having said that, what has happened is the Eagles have flooded the bases with base runners and haven't done it. You know, they needed that one extra hit that they haven't got. In the regular season, so many games they're getting that one extra hit because their opposing pitching and defense is not quite as good.
Right.
It's going to be tough because they're not going to see, unlike the Eagles, you know, the Giants have seen the Eagles' best pitchers.
Yep.
Mima can be good. Well, I think Karashima can be good. They could be good, but what are the chances? Sugiuchi, it's more like a case. He could be bad. You know, he could. I think that there's a 50-50 chance he's going to be really good, and there's maybe, you know, there's a fairly small chance that he could be really bad. Most of the other, you know, the Eagles pitchers, you can't say that much.
Right.
It's like, okay, 10% really good game, 10%, you know, 30% probably a stinker.
Yeah, if they can straighten themselves out on the bases and if they can generate a little bit more offense, I think they'll be in good shape, but we'll have to see. I'm hoping that they just make it a series. I'm looking at they're obviously overmatched in this thing, but if they can correct some of the correctable things, I think they'll give themselves a better chance to win.
Sure. This is where I think Andrew Jones comes in very big. I think he was he was instrumental in this at the beginning of the season, that this team has a lot of good young players. They have a lot of determination and willpower, but they're just making, they're making mistakes that they don't need to be making. You know, they're just fundamental errors. And from the start of camp, he said, like, why do you do it this way? Why don't you do it this way? And, you know, he had two things going for him in that he had this long, stellar major league career. And he's a guy who's, upfront and vocal and friendly. you know, and he's positive. And between Hoshino is a very stern father figure and Andrew Jones giving, you know, spewing out advice at timely intervals. And I think the other thing Andrew Jones has going for him is that I don't want to make any aspersions or odd references, but he comes across as being a fairly good communicator. Mm-hmm. He seems to say, more or less, be able to get his message across, and I think the same of Casey McGee, and I think those two. Okay, now you're in a situation where they need a day to regroup. They're going to a new park. They're going to have a chance to refresh, get the lay of the land. And, I don't know if he's going to say anything, but I think the mood is, look, we're a better team than the Eagles are going to come out and say, we're a better team than we were in Sendai. And the Giants are going to, I don't know what the Giants are going to say. Well, we've been here before, so, you know, we just need 3 wins. But okay. The Eagles are in the same boat, but they just need to remember, you know, what they're good at.
All right. Well, we got to move on. We got to get the rest of the topics here. But, yeah, let's hope they make it a series, at least.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, let's hope so. I mean, there's always that possibility.
All right. Now, the draft took place the other day. I think it was Thursday. And the Eagles hit their luck, stayed as strong as it's been all season when they got the supposed crown jewel of the draft in Yuki Matsui, a little left-handed pitcher. He's 1 meter and 74 centimeters. How's that?
Yeah.
74 kilograms. He's a little fly.
Yeah. Not tiny, but diminutive. He's basically got a tremendous command of his breaking stuff and a decent. He reminds me of Yoshihisa Naruse a little bit, and that, you know, it's all location, movement. He's got some velocity. He's got more velocity than you'd think a small guy like that could generate. But
Kimiyasu Kudo, a former pitcher and a certain Hall of Famer, I think, because he had such a long career, that he said the kid's ball disappears, you know, as it comes to the plate. And he struck out a Koshien record 22 in one game. So he's got that going for him. But I think he's going to take some time to develop. I don't expect him to come out of high school and be on the top team that much next year, if at all. So we'll have to see how he develops. But I wanted to ask you about this because in the draft, and I don't really take that much homework back with me from the draft, but I noticed that there were a lot of pitchers taken in the draft.
Sure.
There were 46 pitchers and 14 infielders. 11 catchers were taken.
There were a lot of catchers this year. That was very weird.
Yeah, and 5 outfielders. Now I was wondering what your opinion of this was, because we also had a lot of the guys who were drafted this time were from the corporate leagues. 31 or from corporate leagues or others, and then 24 high school kids and 21 college guys.
That's probably, yeah, I think that trend, we're moving more and more away from the high school guys. You know, we've got the same trend as we have in the United States, which is that it's not that, the very best players, the very, very best players will tend to be outstanding players when they're very young.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always true, but it's often true. And now we don't know, that's, you know, all things being equal, you know, the guy who's going to be better at 27 is better at 18. But of course things aren't all equal. You know, they're in different programs. They have different coaching. They have different, physical and, mental makeups. So players aren't all different. They all mature at different rates and at different times and have different growth periods. But it used to be the feeling that the best players were high school stars, and once the high school stars were cleaned out in the pro draft, the guys who were left over were leftovers.
Yeah.
You know, who weren't good enough to be drafted when they were 18, so how could they possibly be better when they're 22? But, of course, what happens is the competition is better. It's a completely different situation. There's so many different things. And I've told pretty much everybody who – and so many people couldn't give a darn about it, that at some point in the future, a large number of the top draft picks will be coming out of the independent leagues.
Mm.
And I think this is true. And I think it is growing. This year we had the highest draft choice. We had a second-round draft choice out of the independent leagues. Now, these are people who nobody wanted.
Right.
Industrial teams didn't want them. and pro teams didn't want him. So, you know, but what happens is they're going into a situation where the competition is gradually getting better and better. And I don't think, and I think the competition, I don't know, but depends on the league, depends on the team. But the coaching, what you get at the independent league is you get professional coaching.
Yeah.
We're not getting that at college. You're getting more of the old boys, this is how we play baseball in Japan coaching.
And results-based. They just want to win. I'm not sure that in the corporate leagues that, you know, they can coach their teams to win as much as they can actually give them instruction on how to win.
Well, corporate leagues is a different thing, and in the corporate leagues they do get a lot of ex pros coaching, but the independent leagues I think are a very bright and viable future in terms of talent development in Japan. And anyway, as I said, what's happened is that the problem with high school talent here is the same problem with high school talent in America. It's not that the players aren't good. It's that it's almost impossible to gauge because the competition is so varied in high school.
Yeah. Now, one thing I wanted to point out was that I think it seemed to me that they were going for older pitchers, and maybe the influence of Ryan Yasuhiro Ogawa with the Yakult Swallows. He was a college pitcher. Norimoto, we've been talking about him with the Rakuten Eagles, and he won 15 games with the Eagles this year coming out of college. It just seemed to me that they wanted more mature guys on the mound and guys they could probably use a lot sooner. You know, Tomoyuki Sugano is another guy. He sat out a year, but he came out of college as well.
Sure, sure. Well, that's the idea of wanting now help, and that's where you're talking about trying to project where it's, first of all, two things. It's easier to project where a 22-year-old is going to be who's been pitching in college ball or been pitching in the industrial league. It's against a much tougher competition. It's easier to project what he can do at the pro level, which is not as big a gap, as opposed to what a high school kid is doing against high school batters. That's a very tough projection.
Yeah.
And you can't really... You could look at his stuff, but stuff against lousy, it could be the same stuff, but it's different when it's against guys who have no idea what they're doing and
exactly.
Guys who do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that is a trend that it will continue, and I think the number of high school players will continue to decrease because of the simple fact that although some big stars come out of high school, it's such a gamble that college and industrial league players are much safer bets, and a lot of the better stars are going to a higher percentage of stars are coming out of high school of college and corporate leagues.
Okay, all right. In our last 5 minutes, I want to touch on the fact that the commissioner is done now. The ex commissioner now, he's the former commissioner Ryozo Kato, and he stepped down on Friday, and then our pal Kunio Shimoda, the secretary general.
Yep.
Of the MPB got a slap on the wrist or a slap on the back. He got a demotion and he got a 3-month suspension for vacation or something. I don't know, because this has happened. The vacation is the vacation, or I should say suspension. Yeah, vacation is starting at the off season. It's just,
okay, here's it would have to be because he's busy working, I think. But he's busy finding something else that. Okay, have you read any of the report?
Just some of it. I didn't have time to read it all. Of course, it came out.
Yeah, of course, 81 pages. I don't think you need to be a speed reader and fluent in Japanese to want to read that whole thing.
Yeah.
It's but basically what I got from scanning it and reading, you know, from the Kyoto guys reading it, writing stories about it, and scanning the points that they made and noticing a few other things was – the report documented a lot of meetings between the teams in 2012, basically saying the ball is killing us and we need to do something about the ball. And the commissioner saying, no, the dead ball makes the hitters better, which, you know, that was his theory. That's one. And two, we have a 3-year contract with Mizuno for this ball, so we're going to keep it for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so basically every time it came up, the commissioner said, no, we're not going to change for these reasons, so we're going to give it another year. But all the teams were saying, we should change it, and Shimoda was saying, well, there's one meeting in which the teams say, we should change it, just not tell anybody.
Okay. This is documented in the report.
This was in October. Now, they redacted large parts of the text of these meetings, so we don't know. But they did use occasional quotes where they were available, or they said some teams voiced this opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and some of the teams said, we should just change it and not tell anybody. And in response to that, some of the teams said, well, look, there's 12 people here, and if only the 12 teams and all the people in this room knew about it and we changed it, there's no way we could keep that news from getting out, because that's how information works. It gets out.
Mm-hmm.
And to which Shimoda responded, well, that would be no good. We should just change it and don't tell anybody. But, of course, the commissioner didn't want to change it. So here's the thing. We had all the teams wanted to – or most of the teams wanted to change it badly. The commissioner did not want to change it. And somebody who was all for changing it, Kunio Shimoda, basically probably thought, well, if we can't if 14 people in this room is too many, I'll change it. And I'm not going to tell the commissioner because he wouldn't permit it.
All right. So
thinking of this, and the commissioner came out and said basically that the reason this all happened was because he showed up, he only went to the NPB offices a couple of days a week. And I thought his criticism of the report was fair, in that they said this all happened because the commissioner only showed up at work twice a week.
Yeah, well, he had some parting shots for the independent party, the panel that was put together to study, and he said, well, you know, this result or this announcement coming out about their investigation was done and decided before they even started. And I'm like, yeah, of course it was.
Right.
Of course it was. I mean, does he really think that the ignorance defense is going to work in this case, and that he cannot, you know, he's used to schmoozing and doing other things and not having to actually work. But
I think the point is that they decided from the before they looked into the issue, they decided that he was guilty. He was responsible. I mean, of course he was responsible because he was the commissioner. But at what point do you have an organization that you inherit that is dysfunctional, that is your fault? You know, that's the other question. You know, you inherited this nutcase as his secretary general who thought it was okay to do something behind the commissioner's back, and that was okay. Now they said, well, the problem was he was only there twice a week, and their whole statement was, we need a full-time commissioner, we need somebody who's there, and that was their little crusade. And I'm guessing I can see Kawada's fingerprints all over that.
All right. Well, you know, you're saying he inherited something that was dysfunctional, and the fact that he's not there trying to make it functional is counterproductive.
Well, it was dysfunctional. I mean, yeah. Well, I hear you, but who would have thunk that the organization that was ostensibly people were following was breaking the rules? They weren't breaking baseball rules, but they were breaking rules of common sense, which is, if you make a change, you tell the, you know, if you make a big change, you tell the boss. If you make a decision, you tell the boss.
Yeah.
My point is this, is that basically the whole situation stunk. He was being criticized for basically inheriting an organization where people would go behind his back. Okay, now the fact is that, yeah, he should have noticed that people were going behind his back. But the teams, and the team, you know, they went behind the team's backs as well. I do believe the teams, as much as they argued to change the ball, the fact that nobody ever told them the ball was changing meant the ball wasn't changing. So it was a very peculiar situation. The whole thing was rotten to the core. And for them to say, well, it's all the commissioner's fault is pretty bizarre. And rightly so. So I think his criticism is valid. He also came out and said that he was in some respects lacking in competence for the position he was, and that was also fair.
Okay. Well, my only thing is, and we'll go to one more point before we wrap up the show, but my last thing is that the guy who's really at fault, I thought, all along, obviously was Kunio Yoshimoda, the Secretary General, and he's not losing his job and a demotion, I don't know, and a vacation. I don't know about that either. But anyway, let's move on to the last point here, which is the Cebu Lions' new former managers retaking control of the team, Haruki Ihara, and he said it's time we clean up this act, and he's going to ban facial hair and long hair and those baggy loose stirrups, and he criticized the way the players looked on the field or have looked in recent years. So he's getting off to a rousing start there.
he's old school. He's old school, and I'm very fond of him, but he's old school and not really, I think, in touch.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's a little out of touch.
Yeah, they were 90-49 in 2002, and he took over, and they won the PL title, and then...
they lost the Japan Series. They got swept in the Japan
Series.
They got
to the Japan... That's right. This is when Matsui played against the Giants, and he... Yeah. Yeah, he had gone. He was 0-5 against the Giants until Sunday night here, when he finally tasted victory against them in the Japan Series. So, and then in the next year they were 77-61 and finished second. So he has a winning track record. So I guess if they get wins, the players won't complain.
Well,
they don't have a lot of guys with a lot of facial hair anyway. So I think it's just going to be the uniform cleanup system.
Well, Ihara's is—I don't know if I mentioned this—but Ihara's big thing was that. One of the big things he did when he became Lions manager was make Kazuhiro Wada a full-time outfielder. Actually, he made him full-time engaged because he still had bad heels. He was still had knee trouble at that time.
He made him a full-time. He made him a full-time what?
Designated hitter.
Okay.
And then later an outfielder, basically to get his bat in the lineup. He had been sitting around on the bench as a backup outfielder and backup catcher. So, and, you know, he basically turned into an MVP.
Yep.
So, you know, he did that. He made a couple of, decisions that worked out well. He played, I think he made a couple of the, could give some of the kids more playing time, but he was, you know, he was old school and not, he's a very much bunt first, think later. he's a very quick thinker who doesn't get his problem is that he's dogmatic. I mean, he's a very sharp guy and very quick to respond. He manages games in the sense of deals with challenges within the game very well. His problem is that his teams have to play a certain way and have to do things a certain way that becomes counterproductive because while his game managing can be very flexible, his thinking about games can be very flexible. His whole overall strategy for building a team and for managing games in general is very inflexible. It's bunt, 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 bunt.
Okay, well, it's time for us to bunt. We got to go. But thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Let's lay it down. Please send questions. We didn't have any this week. Send questions or comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll address them on the show. Let's hope the Eagles make this a great Japan series that we can really enjoy.
It's been great so far.
Yep, compelling games, really good stuff. All right, so enjoy your baseball.
Okay, and we will be talking to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.